Hey, welcome to Collabricast. Ben and Roy, and with me, as always, the wonderful Jason Buchholz. Jason, how are you?
I'm doing all right, but I was thinking that Collabricast is 10 days old now, and the world feels a little different than it did 10 days ago. Of course, everybody's attention has been on the Putin and his attack on Ukraine. And one of our very own Collabricasts is on her way there right now. What can you tell our listeners about Caitlin?
Caitlin Farrell is one of our original Collabricasts. She is a dear friend of mine, and she lives here in Madison. She works for, I believe, the state's largest daily newspaper, which is part of a larger newspaper network. And she is on her way, not exactly sure where. She's on her way to Poland, and from Poland she'll either go into Ukraine or she will be at the border to talk to people who are fleeing the violence, fleeing the attacks, and who desperately have a story to tell, and a story that really the world needs to bear witness. And obviously there are conflicts perpetually going on around the globe, and that this is the one that is major in the headlines right now. I find it unfortunately fascinating that, like you said, tensions have been growing for a while. Some level of violence has been expected for quite a bit here, but now it has gotten loud.
I think it was about November or maybe even October that they started seeing the troops amassing at the border.
What I don't want to do is pretend to have geopolitical authority that I don't. And I am somebody who likes to be kept abreast of what's going on in the world. And this has been on my radar, like it has been on so many people's radars for so long. Understanding all of the nuance, trying to predict what's going to happen or how it's going to happen or how people are going to react is not something that I'm qualified to do. But it's important that as much as we can, we give people a chance to tell their story, to have a voice, to be able to testify into the course of human events. Caitlin has spent time previously in Ukraine, and before all of this happened, I don't know, maybe a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we had a long discussion about some of the places that she's traveled in her life, and she absolutely lit up when she talked about her time in Ukraine, and it stuck with me because it's great when you see the contagious nature of people's joy, people's pure joy of going somewhere else and being able to interact with the people of another place. And Caitlin was just so ebullient in her praise of her time in Ukraine. And a few days ago, when the actual invasion took place, we were talking and she mentioned that there was a chance that she was going to go to Ukraine. And I asked her, well, how does that feel? And what is that like? And what's going on emotionally? And you've got the job of reporting, but then you also have the personal take and the personal feeling of going to somewhere that you on a personal level feel is magical and special. And I thought, this would be a good opportunity to talk to one of the Calabrese about why it is they do the thing they do. And so I was able, before she departed for Poland, I was able to have a brief interview with Caitlin to talk about how she's feeling and what it means to bear witness and help tell the stories of others in a situation that is so extreme. So that's what's coming up.
It was generous of her to make time for us on the eve of this major trip as she was scrambling around trying to get ready to go. So thank you very much for that, Caitlin. And let's hear the conversation.
Hi.
Hi.
Who am I talking with?
This is Caitlin Farrell.
You're one of the original Calabrists. And here at Calabrist, we're very much about the importance of helping people tell their stories and to get stories out into the world as a way to better understand humanity. What kind of work do you do, not just as a Calabrist, this organization, but what do you do in the world?
That's a really good way to phrase that question, first of all. But it can entail a variety of things. But what I really try to do is write stories that really illuminate nuanced and complicated issues, and also, you know, highlight that nuance and complexity and depth to the people that I'm featuring in those stories too. So often I do write about politics and policy and government and how government is spending money and behaving. But I also really love, what really draws me to that particular kind of work is writing about how people are affected by various public affairs issues and the way that their governments are behaving, but really using that as a prism through which to share important stories about people's experiences.
When did you know that you wanted to be a journalist?
I knew that I wanted to be a journalist when I was pretty young, about seventh grade. I don't know if you remember. You may not remember, but
I'm 40 years older than you. So
yeah, I was going to say, you're not 40 years older than me, but there was a show. So I grew up watching the nightly news, and so it began, I don't know if you really want the whole story. I could try to keep it brief, but I began watching Dan Rather and the nightly news, like pretty young, like in third grade. I have vivid memories of having political debates about the Bob Dole Clinton election on the school playground with classmates. So I watched the TV news a lot, and for a long time thought my dream was to become a television reporter. And then I saw the show Clarissa Explains It All, which was a television show. Yeah, I loved it and loved that she explained it all, basically. And in that show, which I remember at the time, she seemed so old to me, so cool and older. And I think I don't even know if she's in middle school. Maybe she's in high school. She decides that she wants to become a journalist. And that was really the first time I remember hearing the word journalist. And that's what really planted the seed of sort of what that journalism was and what that role meant in my mind. And then I just kept going from there. I started to write for my local newspaper, and they let me publish. They had a teen column, and I realized that it was an avenue through which I could ask. It was an avenue through which, or at least an excuse by which I could ask anyone any question I wanted to. And sometimes, you know, whether they answered or responded or not was on them, but I was like, I love the access. Like, I interviewed the mayor of Green Bay, and I was like, I feel so powerful that I can ask him anything I want to ask him and then tell people about it. So I've always been really inquisitive and curious by nature. And so in that way, being a journalist really fits me because it's really a way through which I can ask good questions and learn. I'm constantly learning and exploring. And when you feel like you can do that on stories about issues that really are worth exploring and important stories, it's just such a privilege to do that kind of work.
Your curiosity also fuels your love of travel. When you were getting your bearings as a journalist and traveling around, did you apply those same skills and interests in just your conversations with regular folks in faraway outposts?
For a long time, I've switched back and forth a bit, but I had wanted to become a national political correspondent for a while working in America. And then I was really interested and was pursuing being a foreign correspondent for a full-time job and a full-time role. And I didn't end up being able to do foreign affairs or war reporting full-time. But what I did realize is that there is, I think increasingly this is true, a way by which I can ask, help create bridges of understanding between groups of people in our own country, because it is so big. There's an immense diversity in so many ways, obviously also a lot of polarization. And so I think, we can travel to any number of places in the US and it sometimes can feel like we're in another country. And so I've brought that perspective in lieu of me at times, not being able to travel as much as I would love to, and trying to take that perspective and exploring my own state, my own city. And when I do go overseas, and I did graduate school at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and got to do a portion of that in Europe, which was a hugely transformational experience for me, in that it really helped me to understand, what it meant to other people in the world that I was an American, or what being an American meant, and having a better, I think, better informed macro view of globalism and the world and really our place in it. And so I think that really helped me. That was the time when I was not a journalist. I was in graduate school, but that time in graduate school really enhanced, I think, my ability to do better journalism, because it helped me understand who I was and the context through which I understand things and the ways in which that can be really similar and different from people in various parts of the world.
When you were in Europe, where did you go?
So when I was in Europe for graduate school, I studied in Prague, in the Czech Republic. I focused on, my program was a transatlantic master's program focusing on transatlantic affairs and the politics of the European Union. And so, then within that, you could focus on a variety of things. So I was always really interested in Eastern Europe and emerging democracies and the ways in which they succeed and fail and how difficult it is to establish democracy after communism and all the variables and dynamics in that, I think, is super interesting. And so in part too, because, democracy and journalism, and it's just the two go hand in hand as far as, bedrock twins principles. Anyway, so I went to Prague, studied Eastern European politics there. And then I was in Bath in England and studied European security there. But then in the summer in between those two semesters, I backpacked to a variety of places around Europe. I was in Croatia for a time. I went to Ireland and a lot of other Western European countries, Italy. And then I spent a month teaching English in Ukraine, in Lviv. And that experience was incredibly powerful, so much so that I ended up writing my master's thesis for that program about the geopolitics of Ukraine And at the time, that was the end of 2013 and into 2014. I was writing my thesis in the spring of 2014. And that's when the Maidan was happening and Viktor Yanukovych was ousted as the president of the country. And so I wrote a lot about, at that time, there was a lot of talk about Ukraine joining the EU, and Ukraine has, you know, had wanted to join the EU. I think Western folks, people in the Western part of the country still want to be a part of the EU. So I wrote a lot about, would the EU accept Ukraine and what happened with Yanukovych? But aside from those politics, I think the relationships and experiences I had with people in the country was really profound and so special to get that time with people in another country, a really different than a typical tourist experience, you know, because I really got to spend time with folks.
And that brings us to today. It is February 25th, 2022. And as of this recording, Russia has invaded Ukraine, and there is a convergence of your travel and your journalism and your experience. In the next 24 hours, where are you headed?
In the next 24 hours, I'm flying to Krakow, Poland, and then heading to the border, the Ukrainian border, and planning to write about what I see there and what's going on. I'm meeting up, my newspaper is sending me, I've asked to go. been really fortunate to have a great editor and supporter who really, really believes in me and has promoted me into going. It's really difficult and rare these days in the journalism industry to have your newspaper pay for you to go and report these stories because of the finances of it. So the plan is to, I will fly to Poland. I'm meeting up with a few colleagues there, and then we'll go to the border and assess the situation there and just sort of monitor and see how things go. We may try to get into Ukraine depending on how things look in Lviv, whether we go for the day or longer. But Lviv in the western part of the country has not been attacked yet, although there have been air raid sirens there. But Lviv is where I taught, and is where I taught at Ukrainian Catholic University, which is based there. And the Ukrainians there are very anti-Russian, anti-Putin, I should say, and very pro-West. They view themselves as European, want to be a part of the EU, want to be a part of NATO. So yeah, depending on how things look there, the hope is that we can get into Ukraine and go to Lviv, but I'm not sure about that yet. But there's also a thought that there will be a rapidly escalating refugee situation. So Ukraine shares a border with several countries. And so we'll start in Poland, but also there's borders in Hungary, Slovakia, Romania. So those are all options as well, depending on what happens with what's going on in Ukraine.
I can only imagine that there would be quite an emotional mixture brewing inside of you. And I would love to know how much distinction between Caitlin the journalist and Caitlin the human being, if there is any distinction between the two, and just what your emotional state is when you think about not just going, but what is going on and what you may be bearing witness to, and just anything else that comes up.
Yeah, so there's a lot there. I have a lot of emotions. It's a whole stew. It's a whole cocktail of emotions. I am excited. I'm excited, mostly excited. But you know, sprinkled in there is a bit of trepidation and nervousness. You know, I don't want to do, I'm cognizant that Ukraine is really, I mean, dangerous right now, and it's unclear what the Russians will do. I think that they may very well likely move west into Lviv, and so we don't want to do anything unwise. But I think, you know, at my heart, my heart is really drawn and aches to go there into Ukraine, because I think that's really where the story is and where there is the biggest platform at this point to really bear witness to what's happening. There's uncertainty about what I'll find when I get there. I hope that I can find opportunities to shine a light on important people and issues, and just shine a light where a light needs to be shined. As far as distinguishing between Caitlin the person and Caitlin the journalist, it at times can be complex and nuanced. But I do think that, just because, of course, there are personal attributes of Caitlin myself that inform how I do the kind of journalism I do and why I do it and the way in which I do it. And those things are very specific to me. So it's personal and I care about it a tremendous amount. With that in mind, though, I do think it's really important, and I've been having these ongoing just conversations with myself. It's very lively in there these days about how I view my role, what my role is as a journalist, though. I think, my role right now as a journalist is not to be an advocate. Like, I think that's an important distinction to make. I think that there is a role for what a journalist can do. And, you know, inherently there's, I guess, you know, one could make an argument for us being an advocate for story, an advocate for democracy. That's inherent in what being a journalist is. But I think it's important just to I'm really cognizant, I guess, of being clear-eyed, clear-eyed and at times, when appropriate, you know, more dispassionate about what I'm seeing and what things are. So it is kind of it's a balance.
I commend you for being able to, even if it's just in theory, partition off the two parts of you that have to exist to do the job to the best of your ability. As your friend, as somebody who cares about you and who knows you, you know, I hear it and I think about where you're going, and I think about the images that I see on TV and what I read, and just knowing the potential for humans to be humans in both its best and worst senses. And I think of the emotional overload that is possible being present and bearing witness. And I was going to ask you, is there a time where journalist Caitlin does the job, and then when you're on a flight home or in the weeks that follow, that individual Caitlin has to sort of accept the receipt that comes due now that you have the time and the space to process what you've done and seen?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and something that the mechanics of which I feel like I've really learned more in the last few years with the stories that I've done. So I will say that I think for me, it's honestly kind of mostly a big mess of a lot of it all mixed together. So it's like one on, one off, one on, one off. At times, I think it's kind of depended, but I've really worked in general. I guess I don't really operate, or have not. I think it's just, this is true, where it's like not really who I am to go into a situation, especially if it's a prolonged period of time. I could maybe do it like for one interview that lasts an hour, but to go, you know, on a trip that lasts weeks, I can't really turn off my emotions and the Caitlin the person and just be like, okay, I'm in journalist mode, like blinders on, like I'm going into surgery kind of thing, like this is just the job. Because part of what I do need to be able to be receptive to and hit on is the emotion of the moment and what we call color, the details, the richness of the humanity I'm seeing and what their stories are. And if I am in some ways too dispassionate or emotionless about that, then I'm not I don't think I can write and channel then in that way what the spirit of what's happening is. In a way, my goal truly, and this is, you know, writing is such a messy beast, but, you know, I mean, I dream of just and dream and work towards being a writer where my words make people feel something like they were there too, and that you can describe something in such a resonant way that it's powerful. Just, you know, like good fiction and good nonfiction does that. And so all to say, it ends up being at times, I think, messy. You know, I've had times where it's the emotional toll of something will take over, or I'll have, you know, when I'm on the trip or just after something or in the middle of something, and then I'll switch back and forth. But I've tried to be more intentional though, when I know that I'm heading into something that is going to be, especially if I'm writing about something that's particularly traumatic or going into some type of an event that I know might be traumatic, is being mindful at the outset about that and just really being intentional about my thoughts and knowing that I don't, being intentional about my thoughts, I guess, and the emotional boundaries that I have, that I can be receptive to the emotion of the moment, the trauma, what's happening with the humans I see around me, but not absorb it, which is often what I've done in the past, like completely absorb it in a way that it like kind of cripples me by the end, right? You know, doing that for like a month, it's pretty crippling, and then spit it back out in a word story that I create. And so, sorry, that was kind of a long-winded.
No, verbal. that's what I wanted to hear. But, like, I think that's an important part of it, because wanting to get the meat of the story, wanting to be able to get the full story, whether we are telling our own or we are telling others, involves emotional spelunking into caves that don't always have clear maps. And it would surprise me if you were able to say, like, yeah, I go in, I'm a robot, I don't really feel anything, I just write down some details and I'm out. And I am fascinated by the process of when you leave the actual setting of the story, how much do you take with you, even if some of it is temporarily subconscious or temporarily unconscious?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I take I take it all. I mean, I think in some way, whether it is some may be more subconscious than conscious, but yeah, I think so. I, you know, admittedly have not, I mean, the reporting trip I'm embarking on, I have not done before like this. So it's always been a dream of mine, something I've wanted to do, but I've like covered hurricanes and things, other sort of high profile protests, I guess, but I've never done anything like this before. So it'll be interesting to see how it does, what does happen and how it does affect me.
Well, I want to thank you for joining me on Collaboracast. I want to thank you for being a collaborist. I want to also, even more than both of those things, thank you for being a very good friend of mine. And I enjoy our conversations, and I look forward to, once you have arrived back, being able to sit down and talk to you about the adventure that went with getting the story. So, my friend, I wish you a fond farewell and look forward to this and everything else that you are going to be doing in your certainly bright future.
Thank you so much, Ben. I really appreciate it and really value the opportunity to be a part of Collaborist. So thank you truly for inviting me into it.
I wouldn't have thought otherwise. Okay, you keep us updated. And if you have any Collaborist dispatches that you want me to share with people while you're gone, I would gladly do that. So even if it's scraps of voice memos, or if you're able to send over a Word document, I would love that.
Okay. Yeah, that's good to know. I hadn't thought of that as far as voice memos, but sometimes I am a verbal processor, as you may have noticed. So sometimes that's a really helpful way to send dispatches. So I can do that.
Okay. You take care.
You take care too. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks again for your time, Caitlin. And thank you, Ben, for being there to be able to talk to her on the eve of her departure. I'm so struck by that there are people in the world like Caitlin who are so dedicated to finding stories and bringing the truth to light and finding ways to share those things with those of us who are on the other side of the world, sitting in the comfort of our living rooms. We focus on the stories that they're telling and the people in their stories, but we don't often think about the selflessness that it takes to be able to do something like Caitlin is doing. And, you know, as she mentioned, it's democracy and journalism go hand in hand. And I don't think that the world's democracies would be what they are if it weren't for people like her. And I'm very grateful that there are people like her doing what they do. So it's amazingly selfless and brave.
You and me both, and I just want to put out to the universe that Caitlin remains safe, that all journalists remain safe, and that all people remain safe and are afforded the love and compassion that they need to get through this world. It's a scary time, and it can also be a time to really reinforce why it's so important for people to have community and to be a part of the human community. It feels like an awkward and abrupt transition, and certainly it is a significantly more mundane matter, but I would like to just quickly encourage listeners of the podcast to go to the website, collaborist.org, and review the groups that are available. We've got a number of them across a wide variety of subjects being led by dedicated professionals. And some of them are already starting to fill up. One of them might already be closed by the time this podcast is available. But we really do want to bring people together. And we value your experiences and where you are in the world right now and what you're doing, and want to do what we can to help you get your story out to the world. And unless you have anything more, my good friend Jason Buchholz, who I love very much, I think that is pretty much it from here.
That's a heavy duty sign off.
Yeah.
I think we can wrap it up, my dear friend Ben Leroy, whom I also love very much, and want to thank you for your blessing on everybody involved and these prayers for safety and resolution.
Yeah. All right. What's the sign off?
For story.
For community.
Collaborist.
Collaborist.